Hi everyone, Alistair Willis here, Music Director of your South Bend Symphony. Welcome to this season's fourth Aha with Alistair podcast, in which we're going to explore something I've always been fascinated by, colour in orchestral music. So what is colour in music? Is there colour in music? Do you see certain colours when you hear certain sounds or combinations of sounds? We can twist the question. What does blue sound like? Is white a brighter sound than yellow? Does red sound romantic, exciting, or angry? Do composers and musicians think in colors? Well, an orchestra offers composers an infinite palette of musical colors, shades, tones. Composers use the orchestra similarly to how a painter uses colors. And our three composers for our upcoming concert, especially so. Anna Klein, Benjamin Britten, and Antonin Dvorak. Let's start with Anna Klein, a composer who's no stranger to the South Bend Symphony. We've played three of Anna's pieces here, including a world premiere we jointly commissioned with the Fischhoff National Chamber Music Association, which is also based in South Bend. Anna Klein is one of the most performed living composers in the world, and we are thrilled to be presenting a piece she composed in 2021 called Color Field. Color Field was inspired by a painting which uses just three colors. Each of the colors gets its own movement. If you're not familiar with the piece, I invite you to play a game. We're going to play a few seconds of each movement and see if you can guess the three colors. Ready? What color do you think this is? Okay, that was the first color. Remember your guess. Here's the second color. Okay, remember that one as well. Here's the third and final color. Okay, the moment of truth. If you need more time, press pause. Here we go. The first movement was yellow. The second, red. And the third, orange. If you got one, two, or all three, well played, and bravo to Anna Klein. The painting that inspired Anna was Mark Rothko's Orange, Red, Yellow. It's one of his color field paintings, which Anna says, quote, features red and yellow framing a massive swash of vibrant orange that seems to vibrate off the canvas. Well, now that we know the first movement is yellow, let's listen again to the hazy warmth of orchestral color that Anna achieves. Thank you. Let's hear part of Red again, which Anna musically paints with a fiery blaze of bold percussion patterns and lilting lines. Finally, Orange. As we heard, Anna's music starts quietly. It builds slowly, incorporating elements of red and yellow to create orange. Very cool piece and intriguing concept, providing a very fascinating concert experience. Our next piece is by the English composer Benjamin Britten. His first and best known opera, Peter Grimes, is set on the Suffolk coast of England, which he knew intimately. For concert performance, he extracted four orchestral depictions of the sea's many moods. These are dramatic and striking, and colourful. I too am familiar with the Suffolk coastline, and I can see its colours when I hear this music. For example, in the first movement, which is titled Dawn, I see the grey, cold light on the coastline, and I can also feel the mist, hear the cry of the gulls, and the surge of the tide. The musical sequence we just heard repeats, expands, and Britten has the orchestra get louder as the sun rises with brilliant resplendence. Within these now brighter orchestral colours, I also hear the sense of foreboding and of uneasiness relating to the opera's plot. The second interlude is Sunday Morning, taken from the opening of Act Two. First, we hear church bells in sparkling sunshine. The church bells dissolve into musical colors of the surging waves and clamorous seabirds. The third interlude is called Moonlight. To describe the dark water and cloudy sky, Britten chooses low strings, bassoons, and horns, and literally has them mimic a gently swelling ocean. This darkness gives way to moments of lunar radiance poking through the clouds and dancing off the water. An extraordinary and brilliant example of orchestral color. Could there be a more dramatic way to end a piece about the sea than a storm? The fourth and final interlude comes from the storm in Act One and presents not only the forces of nature, but also the emotional opposition between the characters of the opera. To my eyes, it's a very busy canvas with dramatic, angry strokes. This piece means so much to me, and not just the English connection. When I was reading music at Bristol University in England, we studied these pieces in orchestration class, and diving deep into Benjamin Britten's genius use of orchestral color has stayed with me ever since. On our second half, we're going to perform Dvorak's Cello Concerto. Dvorak composed it in America right after his Symphony No. 9 from the New World, and although still physically in the New World, he was already looking forward to going home, which is perhaps why this cello concerto contains far more bohemian nostalgia than his Ninth Symphony. What color does nostalgia sound like? Do melancholy, homesickness, and cheerfulness have colors? Our soloist, the amazing Joshua Roman, certainly thinks so. One of the first things he said when describing the concerto was that to him it is, quote, extremely colorful. And I couldn't agree more. It's full of color, perhaps every color and combination of orchestral sounds, tones, feelings, and emotions. For example, the opening orchestral music before the cello enters, for me, is quite moody and stormy. I see dark colors, a mixed palette. The storm dissipates into a gorgeous French horn solo, bringing warmth, assurance, comfort. What color would this be to you? The solo cellist, who has waited patiently for 3.5 long minutes, finally makes an entrance. While composing the second movement, Dvorak learned that his sister-in-law, Josefina Kaunitzova, was seriously ill. This prompted Dvorak to include, in the middle part of the slow movement, a reference to a song he'd composed that was a special favorite of Josefina's. Shortly after he returned home, Josefina died, and Dvorak wrote 60 bars of new, quiet music to be played right before the end of the third movement. This music is so tender and heartfelt, it feels like there must be more to the story. And indeed there is. Dvorak had been in love with Josefina 30 years earlier when she was one of his students. The attraction was not reciprocated, and Dvorak eventually married Josefina's younger sister. he remained close to her and was devastated by the news of her illness and death. She certainly made her mark on the cello concerto. In addition to the narrative, the emotions, and colorful orchestral textures, there's sweeping lyricism, folk-inspired dances, and great parts for everyone to play in solo roles or partner roles with the cello. And because the cello and orchestra are so intertwined, it's often been considered as a symphonic concerto, or even a cello symphony. Dvorak's concerto was one of the first to really define the cello as soloist. Indeed, it's become the epitome of cello playing, and one of the greatest concertos of all time, which takes us to many beautiful and colorful places musically. Color in music will always fascinate me. Some composers have used colors as descriptions in their titles: Rhapsody in Blue, Green Sleeves, The Blue Danube, and so on. If you're interested in exploring this further, I'd recommend a few pieces like The Color Symphony by Sir Arthur Bliss, Ecstatic Orange and Color Music by Michael Torkey. Best of all, a 10-hour concert with the South Bend Symphony on March 28th. Thanks for listening to Aha with Alastair on WVPE.org.